But we have with us today Commissioner Sam Adams from Portland. And so based upon that, what we're going to do is we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3441 and hear from Elizabeth Martin Haar.
Chairman Butler, I don't have information on that.
Okay, so we have no information on 3441, so we invite Commissioner Sam Adams, so please come forward. Do you want to say anything, Sponsor Berger?
No, thank you. I think that Commissioner Adams can speak for himself pretty well.
Okay, thank you very much. Marge, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Butler, members of the committee. I'm Marge Kafori. I represent the city of Portland. With me is newly elected Commissioner Sam Adams, who is representing the bill before you, House Bill 3441, on behalf of the city of Portland, and he will explain the bill and our reasons for introducing it.
Thank you, Marge.
Chair Butler, Vice Chair Berger, committee, thank you for your time this afternoon. We are an afternoon, yes. In 1963, and we've sought to get the legislative record, but it's not readily available. ORS was 294.341, eliminated the City of Portland's ability to appoint citizens, voting citizens, to its budget committee. Most every other municipal city, every other city in the state of Oregon, has an equal number of elected city councilors and appointed citizens on their budget committee. And the budget committee is prescribed by Oregon statute. It's out of the budget committee that on the city level approved budgets are produced. Approved budgets then go on to become adopted budgets in cities in Oregon. So while this is an especially urgent problem given that Portland is a commission former government, and so this creates the fact that we don't have outside citizens sitting and being able to vote as part of our budget committee to make that approved budget, creates for an unnecessarily politically incestuous budget process. This would allow us to break that open and have tough questions from outside those of us that are commissioners in charge regarding proposed budgets. This is permissive. It does not require we've come to learn more recently that community colleges are considered under Oregon law municipal corporations, so we just want to underscore that this is permissive. This does not require anyone to change anything, but it does state that unless a governing body of such a municipal corporation elects by resolution to create a budget committee in accordance with the provisions of ORS, that it's the status quo for those municipal corporations.
Sam, any idea what the cities and counties will say, the other folks, LOC, AOC, would say, or the other governmental units would say relative to this?
Well, this only affects the city of Portland and potentially community colleges.
Because they're municipal corporations.
Apparently.
They exceed $400,000.
And because it's totally permissive, it wouldn't make sense, in my personal opinion, for community colleges to necessarily throw away what they already have in terms of a budget committee and a budget process and adopt this. It certainly would give them the option, but it doesn't force them in any way to do it.
How about counties? Multnomah County or Marion County with 400,000 people? Is that an issue? Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Adams can explain the structure in Multnomah County that is unique to the state, and it doesn't affect any community colleges outside those in the Portland area. Or any municipalities, and he can explain further that there is a unique process in Multnomah County, so that's why the municipal corporations in Multnomah County would be caught in this. But as I say, it's only a permissive piece. It doesn't dictate that they have to do this. It just allows them along with the city. So if Sam would explain about that.
That's correct. Back in 1963, this provision only focused on Multnomah County, and so it's allowing for Mount Hood Community College, Portland Community College, the City of Portland, and I believe that would be it, that would have the option of adding citizens to their budget committee.
I see. Any known objection then, Sam, on this?
I think that there's someone here from the community colleges that has just recently learned, as we have, that they might be covered, the community colleges in Multnomah County.
But it's permissive. It's
not permissive. We have on the in terms of cities in Multnomah County, there's absolutely no objection that I've heard, and I've done the outreach to the cities.
Any further questions of Commissioner Adams? Representative Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sam, I just wanted to say, if it were me, I would have excluded the commissioners instead of the citizens. But going halfway is pretty good.
Thank you. Progress comes in small steps.
Representative Boquist is recognized.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just cannot miss the opportunity to recognize that this must be a good thing when a commissioner from Portland is admitting that they have an incestuous problem.
Yeah, it was an incestuous budget problem.
Yes, incestuous budget problem. Representative, yes.
Thank you for the correction.
That budget is an important modifier.
Any further questions, Commissioner Adams or Ms. Ford? Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Representative Berger.
Any colleagues, any objection if we bring this back to be heard with a work session? Members of the committee? Okay. From the community college, that we understand? Oh, okay. You may want to go with him. I think he's leaving. We had to have him up here first so that he could get back. We heard what he was making per day. Thank you very much. Any other testimony on behalf of or relative to House Bill 3441? Colleagues, there appearing to be no opposition on 3441. We'll bring it back for a work session on a later day. We are not scheduled to, we did not schedule that for a work session. I'll have staff do that. So with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3441. And let's go back up to the top of our list. And we do not have a committee report, staff report. Staff,
yeah, I can't. Chairman Butler, well, this isn't my bill, but House Bill 2257 looks to me.
Let's open a public hearing on House Bill
2257. So that bill looks to me like it's real technical changes as far as the reference to statutes. So it's just deleting some old references and then putting in new ones, changing a shall to a may in bond statutes here. So it's only amending one statute, ORS 286.535. It was, what's, you know, at the request of the Joint Interim Committee on Judiciary for the Office of Legislative Counsel. So it kind of looks like a council cut technical.
Well, that jaundices it immediately, though. I'm automatically suspect at that point. Is anyone going to testify as to what these sections do?
Chairman Butler, it seems to me it's just that
it's specifying. Well, I think Marjorie Corey's here. She can talk.
Yeah.
About
that.
I guess I had a question on line 9 when you do that, where it says may not exceed versus shall not exceed the amount of bonds. Is that just a Scrivener issue?
Yes. Okay. Yes. All right. Council likes may versus shall.
Okay. This week.
Yeah.
Okay. Colleagues, this corrects the statutory reference to the statutes authorizing the bond issuing amounts. We have no testimony either pro or con. I'm a little bit anxious about that. I'm going to say that. Representative Boquist is recognized.
Mr. Chair, I'm more than anxious because there's a lot of difference between shall and may. And if there's no one from the legislative council is going to tell us what this is.
Yeah. Well,
my mistake, I should have followed Representative Haas's lead on another issue and paid attention.
Just keep
Representative Riley.
If I may.
Yeah, that's right.
Representative Riley has the floor.
I did look to you.
Riley has the floor.
There is a big difference between shall and may, but there is no difference between shall not and may not.
Okay.
It's true.
Thank you for that explanation. That's probably right. Okay, Elizabeth?
Chairman Butler, we can get someone from council maybe the next time we hear it or something, okay, if you'd like.
We are scheduled for a work session on it today.
Oh,
and if yes, it's scheduled for possible work session.
Oh,
so if we need to stand in a recess for a moment, or we can come back to it. Let's do this. Any public testimony on 2257? Hearing and seeing none, we will close the public hearing with the potential that we may open up a work session on this, depending upon if we get some counsel forward on 2257. I'm going to open a public hearing on 2521.
Okay. Chairman Butler, with House Bill 2521, now this is an issue that has quite a bit of history and stuff, but it's allowing an Oregon subtraction for local government non-PERS pension income. So it's basically allowing these non-PERS pension income to conform with our current law treatment for PERS and federal public service pension income.
This is strictly with regard to public service pension.
That's right. That's correct.
In the state of Oregon?
In the state of Oregon. And it is restricting that subtraction amount, the same treatment as we have under PERS, in the sense that it's just the public pension income attributable to public service employment occurring before October 1st, 1991. Now, we have had various court cases and stuff on this whole issue. And so basically, under current law, that is what we're allowing. We're only exempting the pension income that has for public service occurring before October 1st, 1991.
Do we know how many plans this actually affects?
Yeah, Chairman Butler, at this time, I do not know exactly how many cities. I talked with Michelle Dyster yesterday. She said she would try to get me some information. She hasn't been able to do that yet. Counties, someone from the counties came to see me. I know there's about, I think, 10 or so different, and it's not like a whole county plan. Sometimes it's just, you know, police and fire of certain counties and things, and then also special districts. There's various special districts I know out there that have their own retirement plans. Now, the other criteria that has to be involved here is the local government retirement plan has to be equal to or better than any PERS, than the PERS benefits. So that does restrict certain local government plans, which may not be to that level of equal to or better than the public employees retirement system. So
that's the current law?
That's current law in terms of there is a certain, we're referring to a statute in here, and here on page 3 of subject to these retirement benefits from a plan or system that is subject to ORS 237.635 and 237.637. That has to do with plans that have to be equal to or better than any PERS plan. So it's just, in law, we've already identified that there are these plans, and so that's just referring to just those plans being allowed the subtraction. So that will eliminate some local government plans. And this is applying to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2006.
So only those plans which were equal to or better than PERS would be covered under this.
That's
and
right.
Would be subject to the exclusion.
Right.
Are there really such animals that exist out there?
Yeah. The Portland Police and Fire is one of those larger retirement plans. I know Michelle was going through and naming off a few of them yesterday.
Michelle, come forward with you, please. We're delighted to have you with us today. Marge, do you want to say anything on behalf of Portland, too? You're welcome to. I mean, we're going to have a hearing that's going to be the shortest in the history of the committee here very shortly. And I know how all these folks would leave here complaining.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Michelle Dyster with the League of Oregon Cities. As you know, there are 240 incorporated cities in the state of Oregon. I believe roughly in the neighborhood of 170 are members of PERS. There are some that have all of their members in PERS and some that only have some of their members in PERS. An example of that would be the city of Springfield. They've got their general service employees in PERS, but their police and fire are one of these equal to or better than types of pension plans. So there are about, I believe there are 7 cities with ETOB plans for their police and fire. Okay. And of the cities that are not in PERS at all, some of them are so small that they don't offer a public pension plan to any of their employees because they're a 0.5 FTE or a 1 0.0 FTE, for example. All they have is a city recorder. So I hope that helps kind of give you an idea of what the breadth and scope of this particular bill might encompass.
Okay. Michelle, do I understand you're working with Legislative Fiscal Council, Legislative Council, Legislative Revenue, excuse me, get it said right here, that you're working with Legislative Revenue to establish how many ETOBTs there are out there and what the potential fiscal impact of these might be?
Mr. Chair, I can certainly forward a list of that and should have done that in prior to this hearing, okay. But I will certainly get that to Lizbeth.
Great. We'll bring this back at that time. Marge, did you have something you would like to contribute?
I can briefly add, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Marge Kafoury, City of Portland. We have are obviously the largest and probably the most incestuous carrying on with this theme that we've established today, retirement system for our non-PERS police and fire employees at the city. What this does, as we read it, is simply put, FPDNR, which is the Police and Fire Pension Disability Retirement System for our police and fire, on exactly the same footing as PERS is for treatment of taxation of retirement income now, given the laws changed over the last number of years. So we support this bill.
Mark, Michelle, I'm going to say something here. I may be totally out of line in saying it, but this is the stuff that Davis v. Michigan was made out of. Has there been any court cases over this? This is the very thing that brought the Davis to the forefront. Was that the federal retirees, public employee retirement, mm-hmm. were being treated differently than the state retirees? And here we have other public employee retirement being treated different than other PERS.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe it was my understanding that this particular bill is linked to legislation from a couple of years ago stemming from House Bill 3349, in which, you know, that issue several years ago, unfortunately it was before I got here, so the details for me are a little bit cloudy, but the fact that when public pensions... When PERS became taxable, benefits were bumped up to cover that particular amount of income tax then that was derived from PERS. So perhaps I'm mixing my metaphors here, but I think there might be some link here between that issue and the bill before you today.
Yeah, but that's what drove Davis back to the case in Oregon. That's why we had the federal retirees lawsuit, mm-hmm. which then set the federal retirees back at the same level because what happened was that they said, wait a minute, you're going to tax them and tax us, but you're going to boost them to pay the tax. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that didn't put us on equal footing. And that's where 3349, if we could, we should ought to have been reversed. Not only did the state receive the income tax benefit out of it, but local governments then picked up the cost of it.
Mr. Chair, yes. But that was something we argued for several years.
I may be out of line in this, and even saying this, but it looks like to me that this is the stuff that Davis v. Michigan was made out of. So I'm just anxious that we have two different methods of treating mm-hmm. retirees here. I'd like to have an opportunity to have you folks discuss that amongst each other and get some numbers back from Legislative Revenue. We may need to seek counsel from the Attorney General's office too to make sure that this isn't a piece of legislation that ought to be just swept away. We've got to look at it very carefully.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, perhaps somebody from PERS might be helpful in that discussion as well.
Well, the cost, at first I didn't think this was a big cost driver, but as I look at it, this could be an extremely big cost driver. I know that Representative Dallin brought this forward on behalf of a group of 10 employees in a small district in his house district, but this is significant.
Mm-hmm. We'll take a closer look at it too, as well.
Maybe we ought to just make it east of the mountains. You think? I mean, as long as we're fighting for looking for a fight in the lawsuit somewhere. Representative, please.
It's not about that last comment.
Oh, okay. thank you, Representative.
Okay. The thing that I don't quite get is the language saying equal to or better than PERS. Mm-hmm. What about those other folks that are not equal to or better than PERS? I don't quite understand what's going on there.
I could take one stab at that question, Mr. Chair and Representative Riley. Statute was amended in, I believe, I can't tell you exactly, but it's been a number of years ago, because there were complaints that PERS-covered retirees had better plans than non-PERS-covered retirees. And so there has been a statutory requirement for a number of years that those plans have to be equal to or better. All non-PERS retirement plans for public employees...
I think it's police and fire only.
Is it police and fire only?
I
stand corrected. Police and fire have to be equal to or better than PERS-covered plans. PERS goes through a review either at the request of non-PERS-covered retirees or at its own volition or at the request of the local government periodically to determine, based on a number of factors, whether those plans continue to be equal to or better than. So it is something that is looked at regularly.
Representative Friday?
Yes, so your comment, only police and fire, is very telling. There are some public employees who have lesser plans. Is that what I understand?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, there are local governments who have opted not to participate in PERS. Mm-hmm. They offer their employees another retirement plan. Those benefits are different. Whether they are more or less, I think, depends upon who you ask.
Okay.
Representative Berger is recognized.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, to your question about the lawsuit and the federal issue, I'm not a lawyer and don't want to wade into such waters, but it seems to me that was an issue somewhat different in that these employee benefits plans were contracted by these folks in good faith, and they had a certain parameters. And the federal issue had to do with the feds being on Oregon for treating their employees differently. I'm not sure that they're the same or that this is caught up in that. Not saying this isn't a good bill or a good effort. I'm just saying that we may be in an apples and oranges situation, and clearly we need a lot more information before we can do anything.
I hope you're right, Representative. Yeah, my concern is that it just seems to smack of many of the same issues that have come out of the original lawsuit and then which were eventually addressed, and that was 1997 on 3349, which shifted the whole paradigm. And basically said they're going to be taxable, which they are, but state employees will get a bonus, and that bonus amount then was to help them pay their tax, and then that left an additional lawsuit which had the federal government come back and say, federal employees come back and say, oh yeah, you thought you were making us equal by giving them 7% or 9% more boost in compensation so they could pay their tax. That ain't going to work. And so we started the whole, we were back at square one and started all over again. So I'm just anxious, and I would like to have more information, and I'll look to you, Michelle. This is your fourth work group that you're on, Michelle?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. But I would look to you to work with our staff and make sure that we get that information back. And then if we can gain access to legislative counsel, I would appreciate it. And then also, I think it may be something that somewhere along the line a legislator needs to ask for an opinion from the Attorney General's office. I just don't want to walk into that.
Maybe we could ask Representative Bowman.
Okay. Yeah, and he would be
it's his
bill. He would be the indicated party. So, and we'd called for him beforehand, and he wasn't planning on coming to this hearing. With that, the only other item we've got is as to whether or not we've got counsel on 2257. Let's not. Let's just go ahead and close.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. We will close the public hearing on 2521, and seeing that there's no further business, we will close.